Hi, and welcome back. My name is Jack Register, and I am your host for The Organizing Therapist, a podcast for therapists to understand the public policy process and to be able to create change and affect how things happen within that venue. This podcast is informational, and I'm sharing with you my experiences not only as a practitioner myself and as a practice owner and as somebody who has worked for all different kinds of practice sizes, as well as someone who's been a public policy professional in the past. I've done state and federal work, and I've actually lobbied in both the state level and in Congress, as well as federal agencies to create change. Part of the reason why private practice owners are coming together and clinicians are coming together right now is that there's a large venture capitalist sort of push to move towards sort of owning the space of the private practice landscape. And many new practitioners, when they're first coming out and they're in that associate level, getting their independent licensing sort of status, find themselves in a very difficult place to be able to figure out, how do I take care of myself in a practice environment that is so huge? So we're going to talk today about some of the barriers, as well as some of the realities and some of the things we can actually do so that we can work together to create change. The opinions expressed in this podcast are mine alone. They don't represent any organization or association to which I am affiliated. And I'm happy to have bigger conversations with folks. You can check out what I'm up to at my website at jack-register.com. And all of this happens separate from the clinical work that I do. So one of the first things that comes up is this idea of power. Large companies tend to have more power. Insurance companies tend to have more power on how things actually happen. That's actually a misnomer, because one of the things that happens in the advocacy arena is sometimes what we used to call before the internet, the power of 10. And this is the idea that most people at the state and federal level, if they actually received phone calls or visits from people who are directly affected by something, those one visits, those one phone calls represent hundreds of emails. We like to think, many of us do, that in today's electronic age, that sending an email has the same impact as showing up in person or making a phone call. And that's actually not true. And if we think about it, think about your own day-to-day life. Many of us might have email boxes that are full and that we might spend time in different points in our week just sorting through all of those messages. And we may not even really read half of them. We might just scan through them. But if it's a phone call or if it's a face-to-face visit, oftentimes somebody coming to the office or someone showing up in our world in terms of a phone call is going to get more of our attention. So the idea is it's really this factor of 10. The other thing is too, is to think about the idea of solidarity, is to join together with other clinicians. And this is starting to happen around the country. There are pockets of groups coming together. All you need to do is to get into social media and actually take a look. And there's tons of groups that are expressing, hey, I'm having this problem, I'm having that problem. And this is really the power of what social media can really do, which is to amplify our own effect and amplify our own experiences. All we're really trying to do is to say, hey, if we're all sharing similar kinds of experiences, why can't we do something about that in a bigger way? So part of the issue here too is that really what we're talking about is an extension of healthcare, whether we want to abide by this definition or not. Right? Psychotherapy is an extension of healthcare. It is part of behavioral health. And for so many years, we fought for parity legislation, which was to say insurance companies had to treat behavioral health and addiction the same as they did medicine. Well, by extension, what that meant is that our world gets blended in now with healthcare in general. And that comes from everything from having to have those moments of medical necessity, all the way up to the idea for how people view us and how insurance companies view us. So it's an access to care issue. And regardless of how we put together our care, because there are plenty of medical folks in the exact same boat that we're in, trying to do what it is that they're specialized in doing and struggling in a similar kind of environment, we have to be able to come together to talk about the access issues and how access directly affects whether or not people can actually get what it is that they're looking for. And we may not be able to get into the door on our own. And we all know that if you're not part of some big group, or in some cases, part of these big venture capital firms, you might find yourself in a situation where it's harder for you to access insurance contracts, or the rate of pay that you would get from them is significantly different. All of these become a part of the dialogue that we have to be a part of. There's also this notion in a very, very, very basic business sense of what's called market consolidation. If we think about the idea that what we in clinical terms might call your niche or your specialty, that's actually in business terms called your market. And when we think about the idea of market consolidation, it's the notion of how do we collapse similar kinds of experiences that people need to have or similar kinds of markets into much bigger markets that then allow for more competition. My friends, the unfortunate part of this whole conversation is that we as practitioners have to start thinking like business owners. If you own a practice, you are a business owner. That means you have to start considering, and this was something I struggled with myself for many, many years. We have to start thinking like business people. That means I have to look at who are the people that I compete against? Who are the people who are doing exactly the same thing that I'm doing, and how are they doing it different than I am? And so this might mean that I need to be doing some market research. It means I might need to be looking at websites and kind of figuring out how other folks are showing up in the same space. And that might then help me refine and continually refine. And that's part of the problem, is that it forces us to consistently think about how we show up in terms of how we are marketing ourselves. The big thing that all of us struggle with, and this is one of the biggest things out there, is the reimbursement rates. Insurance companies frequently will dictate reimbursement rates for therapy services, and this actually creates a huge strain on small practices. Some of us have been able to really carve out a space in the private pay market because of the particular kinds of niches or markets that we are able to serve. Other folks have not been able to do that. And so this becomes a constant balancing act of how do I package, how do I reshape, how do I do all kinds of things differently? And you'll find if you get onto social media and you start talking to other practice owners, there are folks out there doing everything from in private intensives to folks doing more digital content creation or all kinds of other ways to put what they have out there in front of folks to be able to access. And that becomes a whole other kettle of fish. This can be a very isolating event for a business owner. And this is why we must band together in whatever way we feel comfortable in doing so, so that we can share consistency and share stories with what's going on. One of the things that I have found in my work as a policy person is something that many folks in our industry in behavioral health and addictions find really hard to understand. This is not about the hearts and minds argument. The hearts and minds argument says we are trying to convince policymakers to do what's right. Oftentimes, folks who are in policymaking decisions may start out that way. But when things come to limited resources, or they come to an idea of a choice between priorities, it becomes about what makes the most business sense. And as much as that is not a perspective that is easy to abide by, it is a truth perspective, and it is one that many of us have to become okay with, whether we want to or not. And it is something I'll tell you in my own experience, I had to sit with a lot because I kept thinking if I just could find the right argument, if I can just find the right data, then it would be something that people in policymaking positions would understand. So, by extension, with this, part of the issue is those of us who were in behavioral health operate out of a prevention mindset. The treatments that we provide are to help people to not get worse in whatever it is that they're experiencing. That's a long-term perspective and a long-term way of looking at how do we help create a different community. And one of the things that's very difficult to understand about the policymaking process is that many people in elected office have a here and now orientation. And so I want you to hear this really clearly because it makes no logical sense when I say it, and I know that. There are folks in elected office, not all, but there are some, who would spend $50,000 today to save $5,000 tomorrow. Or they would only spend $5,000 today knowing it's going to cost $50,000 tomorrow. Because the idea of all of the research in public health, our public health colleagues, and epidemiology folks have done a beautiful job in the predictive models of what happens if we don't. Human development and family studies have shown us what happens if we don't, right? If we don't intervene now, what's the long-term consequence? And many people who are in elected positions struggle to take a long view. Now, again, this is not all. This has just been part of my experience as an advocate who's worked across the health and behavioral health and human services systems to try and get policymakers to do everything from criminal justice reform to services for youth who are at risk, services for the elderly, and so on. And what I consistently find is it's very difficult for folks to understand by investing in professionals like me on the front end, huge amounts of time, data, energy, and resources get saved on the back end because we, in essence, remove people from the system of care because we keep them either stable, we help them find what they're looking for, or we're able to teach them skills to be self-advocates in the future. The hard part is for many folks is that that sort of orientation doesn't necessarily lead to results that they need to have whenever they're trying to justify a huge investment on the front end. And that's something that we have to be okay that people are struggling with. And that's really tough. That's a really tough place to be in. So part of our job with this is to first just take it slow and build the relationships. Building relationships is incredibly difficult because the number one rule in policy work is that it will take you a very long time to build a relationship. And it will take you seconds to destroy it. Because the minute we start targeting individual folks in policymaking roles, whether we agree or disagree with them or not, but the minute we start targeting them in such a way that we have now embarrassed them publicly, we're no longer going to have any sort of right to actually speak to them. And while this doesn't feel right, for those of us who have a strong social justice focus, if someone's doing something wrong, we should have the right to be able to call them out on that in the media and do whatever it is that we need to do so that they understand that what they're doing is incorrect. I don't disagree with those tenets at all in terms of philosophy. But on the flip side of that, those folks are going to be unwilling to consider anything that we have to say in the future because we've now put them in the position where they know that they either do what we're asking them to do or they're going to be embarrassed. And this is a very, very difficult place to be. So, what this means in the grand scheme of things is to be strategic. Sometimes we have to throw the rules out the window and use different kinds of organizing tactics. And we're going to get into those in a later podcast. And as practitioners of public policy, which is what business owners really are, whether we like to think so or not, we have to be strategic in what our interventions are, just like we would with our clients. And I think of it as sometimes I have to see elected officials as my client, and I am trying to help them through a plan of care so that they can get what they need from me and I can get what I need from them. Now, this is an odd mindset, but what it does is it puts me into the perspective of remembering my ethics as a clinician. Which means communication, active listening, consistently showing up and being as authentic as I can be about the concerns, voicing how I see something, and trying my best not to personalize. And keeping those boundaries really clear about how I would treat them with someone I disagree with. Because if not, it's easy to get lost in the you're not a cool kid on the playground, so therefore I'm going to do whatever I can to shame you. Well, again, it takes a very long time to build a relationship and it takes seconds to destroy it. So part of the issue is that in order for us to create change, we actually have to address some of the policy formation. And policy formation happens not only in government itself, but in the agencies of government who then implement laws. So learning how to do this is something that's really incredibly important and something that can be very timely in terms of the return on investment. So, some of the barriers that we tend to get into are what's called fragmented advocacy. Our field of behavioral health in general is very diverse. This means that we might have a lot of folks doing different things and we're not coalescing our energy. And the thing is that on a macro scale, on the biggest picture possible, in order for us to truly affect change, we have to be able to band together. So this is where things like a business association or trade associations become really important. Inconsistency in policy change. We see tons of change happening at state levels and then at federal levels. Whenever there's a new administration, these things are coming so quickly that it's very difficult to keep up. And part of being a policy person is really doing your homework and looking at understanding the implications of something so that when we meet with a policymaker and we say, hey, this change that just happened in Medicare or this change that just happened in reimbursement policies for my particular practice doing this particular niche have dramatically affected my ability to make a living. Being able to demonstrate that data in clear ways is incredibly important. One of the other big pieces that comes up is the political knowledge gap. And legislative processes are not something that's simply an easy thing to understand. It is something like many other things in life. We have to have a little bit of experience and spend some time actually pulling things apart in order to be able to be in a different space. So it's important. Something that I know that many, many practice owners struggle with is if I get involved in advocacy efforts, will there be retaliation? And this is something we have to just be clear about. It is important that we be clear about who we are. And what I would say to you is this. There are plenty of doctors across the medical world who are advocates. There are plenty of folks who get direct reimbursements from the very people that they are lobbying and advocating. They're just clear and upfront about it. And so the key thing is to make sure that we are being as open and as honest as we can so that we are not showing up in a hostile way, which then puts people into a position that this is nothing but a conflict and going to be very difficult to resolve. The biggest barrier that I would say is time constraints. Small practices, typically, we have multiple things going on. If you're like me, I wear all the hats, right? And so taking the time and energy and effort to be able to show up differently is incredibly difficult. So it means I have to schedule it in or I have to make it a part of my practice. So, for example, in my own, what I've done is that instead of increasing a program where I might start another group or I might start another business line, I'm now using that towards advocacy efforts in terms of where I put my time. And I budget out my time as money. So my business need X amount of dollars to survive. My folks who work for me need X amount of dollars in order to stay with me. And this is what I can bring in the door. And so I'm consistently looking at where is the return on investment in terms of my time. So doing policy analysis, doing responses whenever there is a call for comments from an insurance company, trying to be a part of as many panels as I can in a virtual way and absorbing data by email or by reading, as opposed to constantly just being in meetings, but then also having the capacity when necessary to show up in those spaces. So it's a tough place to be. And this is something that many of us can simply start with today. So here are three solutions that you can do today in your practice. First and foremost, we must give folks a sense of what's up with us. And what I mean by that is being able to show a policymaker what my trends are. So when I do my end of the month reports for myself, right? So how did we do in terms of income? How did we do in terms of expenses, the standard business stuff? I also then look at what are the trends of the patients that we're serving or clients that we're serving. So what kind of diagnostics did we see? What kind of interventions were useful? How much capacity did me and my team have to put out in terms of our levels of expertise? Like how many clients were we at our knife's edge of competence with? Or how many clients did we really just do well with standard operating practices? Then how did we advertise? What were our media costs? All of those kinds of things, and kind of put all of that together in terms of what was the return on investment for the folks on my team in terms of our time and energy with what happened with our clients this month. I'm then able to break that out and show over time how to do that. And in a later podcast, I'm going to actually walk folks through that process that I use in terms of documenting that so that you'll actually be able to see in real time what that looks like. The second thing that you can do is to start relationships at the local level with your local authorities and with every single provider relations committee that you can get on with the insurance contracts you have. If you have a contract with somebody who is an insurer, more than likely they're going to have a provider relations group or they're going to have a provider relations staff. Get to know these folks by first name. Send them a monthly, a quarterly email, just touching base, giving a sense of what's going on, any kind of wins that you have, and any kind of struggles that you have too. But these relationship buildings become super intentional. And the more you can build relationships, the more you can have experiences where you can actually have policymakers call on you to be an expert. And when you are able to be somebody's expert, that means that you're a trusted resource. That then gives you capacity to speak in ways that many of our other colleagues may not have. The third thing that you can do is that in the strategic planning for your process, for your group practice, is to build in strategies for how can you lend time to advocacy efforts? What does that look like? So it might be something as simple as hosting a macro intern who can look at some trends that you have as a part of a trade association, being the one who helps to supervise the student, or being the one who helps the trade association get contact at the university to have somebody, being someone who's able to review huge amounts of data that might come out in the budget. If numbers are your thing and policy procedures are your thing, being able to read through administrative rules and finding nuances is really, really helpful. This is something that not a lot of folks have skill at doing, but many of us who are practice owners do. So those are three different ways in which you can show up and actually build into your practice today advocacy efforts that'll pay off tomorrow. Again, our podcast is informational. All the views expressed here are my own and represent my experiences as a practitioner, practice owner, policy advocate, professor, and PhD student. If you're interested in finding out more about what I'm up to, please give me a shout. You can reach my website at jack-register.com. Thank you so much, my friends, and have a wonderful holiday. Take care.